Blog Talk Radio.
Great start, everybody, and welcome you all to Drive to HR. And I know you have all had a wonderful, wonderful long weekend, family time, and party time as well. So without further ado, let's kick off the show. Today, this is Nisha, your host, if you don't know, and my partners, Brian Winton and William Tincup, are not available today. So this is going to be me doing a solo with our wonderful guest, one of my favorite speakers and thought leaders in the HR space, Joe Gerstein. Hey, Joe, welcome to the show.
Hi, Nisha. Thanks for having me.
Hi. Well, glad to have you here with us today.
So, I'm glad to be here, and I'll also take this opportunity to wish you a belated happy birthday.
Oh, thank you so much for that. I had a blast this weekend, and it happened to be a long weekend, so I really had a great time. So, Joe, if there is anyone out there who doesn't know of you, we would appreciate if you can talk a little bit more about you.
Sure. So my name is Joe Gerstand, and I am a speaker and an author and a consultant, and most of my work is focused on issues related to diversity and inclusion. So I speak at a lot of conferences and events like that, and then I also do quite a bit of work for corporate clients, helping them come to greater clarity around what diversity and inclusion really are, why they're important, and how to capture that associated value. And you can find out more about me and find ways to contact me at my website. It's joegerstandt.com, joegerstandt.
Great. So let's move on to the question for the next 30 minutes. What's keeping you up at night these days?
Well, other than my kids, what keeps me up at night is usually something related to the work that I do, diversity and inclusion, and helping organizations move forward with that. So what I thought I would do today is talk a little bit about some resources that are out there. As someone who's been doing this work for a while and takes it pretty seriously and cares about it, I'm pretty hypercritical of folks that do diversity and inclusion work, and so I try to spread the word about folks that I think are doing really good work. So I thought I would share a few people that are doing work and talk about a couple of events that I think pretty highly of. So hopefully if folks are looking for resources related to diversity and inclusion, there'll be something in there that will be helpful for them.
Yeah, that would be wonderful. In fact, Our audience will be more curious to know what are some resources and probably the speakers that they should look out for. It would be really helpful if you can share some of the diversity resources that you would suggest from websites
absolutely.
And then speakers and, yeah.
So should I go ahead and jump into that, Nisha?
Yeah, go ahead. If an organization, they are trying to incorporate their diversity initiatives for the first time in an organization, where would you suggest they should go and look out for, you know, at least to get some basic idea on, you know, where to get started or how to get started?
Yeah. Yeah, well, one of the people that comes to mind immediately that I think very highly of is a lady by the name of Mary Frances Winters, and you can find her at her website. It's thewintersgroup.com, Mary Frances Winters runs that organization, but her daughter and some other folks are involved as well, and she's been doing diversity work for about 30 years now. In fact, it's a little bit over because they celebrated their 30th year this past year. And one of the things that I like about Mary Frances Winters is that not only has she been doing this work a long time, but she has very much kept up. she and the rest of her organization are talking about stuff that's relevant today. And they put out a lot of really good content. I think it's one of the best diversity blogs. They put out some white papers. They have a number of webinars available. And she speaks at a lot of conferences. So that's one place I would start. I think it's a great blog to subscribe to. They do a good job of putting out good quality content about relevant, timely issues. And they put out quite a bit of content. I think the email that I get from the blog, I think it comes out weekly. But there's just by going to that one website, there's quite a bit there in the way of resources. And some of it's free and some of it's costs some money, but I think that's a really good place to start. And one of my favorite speakers and thought leaders about diversity and inclusion, wintersgroup.com. Another one that I think really highly of is a lady by the name of Jennifer Brown, and her organization is Jennifer Brown Consulting, and that's actually their website as well, jenniferbrownconsulting.com. And Jennifer is on the East Coast. I think she's in New York City, I think, or maybe D.C., but very cool work, has focused a lot of her work on employee resource groups. I think when I think of employee resource groups or affinity groups, Jennifer Brown is one of the first names that comes to mind. And that's not all of the diversity and inclusion work that she does, but that's been one of her areas of focus in the past. But I've seen her speak about generational diversity. I've seen her speak about a number of different issues. And she's got a blog as well and puts out some pretty good content. But I'm a big fan of her work. So there's a couple of places to get started with the Winters Group and with Jennifer Brown. The next one that comes to mind is another guy from the Midwest. He's a little bit closer to where I'm at. His name is Andre Cohen. Andre is A-N-D-R-E. His last name is Cohen, K-O-E-N. And his website is andrecohen.com. And Andre is probably my favorite diversity speaker. I've known him for, I don't know, 4 or 5 years now, and I've seen him speak 2 or 3 times. And he is, I think, one of the most engaging, dynamic, thoughtful diversity inclusion presenters that I've seen. Just a really amazing speaker. And he puts out a ton of content, puts out a lot of stuff in video. He puts out a lot of slide decks. So he shares a lot of stuff. And, again, some of it's free, some of it's not. But he puts out a tremendous amount of content. So I think that, you know, that's another place to look. There's a lot of information available through him and through his website. If you see his name on a conference agenda, I highly recommend it. He's one of my absolute favorite keynote speakers. I haven't seen him speak in a while, but very good, very engaging, high energy, very dynamic, and really a deep knowledge base on this set of issues.
Go ahead, please.
Another one that comes to mind, an organization I'm a really big fan of, is Cook Ross. C-O-O-K-R-O-S-S, Cook Ross, and their website is cookross.com. And this is another organization that's been around and doing this work for a long time. The boss at Cook Ross, Howard Ross, and he is, along with Mary Frances Winters, is one of the huge names, one of the huge thought leaders in this industry. Been doing it a long time and has stayed relevant. The lovely and talented Eric Peterson, formerly of SHRM, also works at Cook Ross. Everybody I've interacted with is just pretty amazing. Howard Ross, Leslie, Eric Peterson, there's quite a few folks over there that I've interacted with that are just really, Howie Schaefer, really, really good folks. And they put out a lot of great content. They've developed a lot of stuff over the past couple of years focusing on unconscious bias, and they put on workshops and retreats focused on that. I've seen Howard speak about it a couple of times. In fact, Howard's got a new book that is just coming out. I can't think of the name of his book off the top of my head, but big fan of their work. Howard has spoke at a lot of conferences. A lot of the HR folks will be familiar with Eric Peterson. Really good stuff, really good content. and a good another good place to start.
Great. Joe, for an organization who, as I said, for that initial stage when they are going to do some initiative or probably solid policies and procedures on their diversity initiatives, how should they get started while hiring a consultant? Because I've seen most of the time organizations hire a specialized consultant in order to dive into the process and help them throughout the process. So when they work with the consultant, what do you suggest? What are some information that they would require? And who would they expect support from within that organization?
Well, I think that, I think one of the problems that shows up in working
Hello?
With the diversity. I'm sorry, can you still hear me?
Are you there?
Can you still hear me?
I guess we lost the call, I think, for some reason due to some technical trouble. And Joe, if you're listening to the show, please call into 347-996-5600 and approaching or reading more resources about diversity and inclusion. Hey, Joe?
Yes.
There you are.
Hello?
Sorry. No, don't worry. We are still live on air. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Already, great.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Good.
So I was asking the question, when an organization hire a consultant in order to dive into the process of implementing their diversity initiative, what do you suggest to the organization and especially to the HR department? How should they help this consultant in order to make this initiative a successful one?
Yeah, I think wonderful question. I think one of the problems that kind of shows up when an organization brings in a consultant to help with diversity inclusion work is that the organization hasn't done any foundational work, and so they're very susceptible to, the framework and the charisma and the sales pitch of the consultant. So I see a lot of organizations that don't really know what they're supposed to do. They're not really having good conversations about diversity and inclusion, so they just bring in some consultant. And they get really excited about what the consultant has to say, and they, launch something, and then a year down the road or 18 months down the road, it kind of collapses because the consultant isn't there anymore, and there's not a strong kind of organic foundation for this work inside the organization. So I think that it's actually pretty important for the organization, for especially the senior leadership folks, probably the HR folks as well, to be having some serious and some candid conversations about diversity and inclusion before they even bring a consultant in, so they can have some sense of what kind of consultant they need to look for, what kind of work they need to be thinking about doing. And I think a lot of times that just isn't present. And I think, there's this kind of weird dynamic about diversity and inclusion is that the less that you talk about it as an organization, the less comfortable that you are trying to talk about it. So a lot of times we just avoid those conversations and bring in a consultant, and I don't see that always, working out very well in the long term. So I think that conversation needs to be going on. And I think it's not just an HR conversation. It's got to be a conversation that the leadership team is having. And I personally believe that the consultant shouldn't even come in through HR. I think that diversity inclusion work is bigger than HR. There's aspects of diversity inclusion work that don't have anything to do with HR. So I think it's kind of a problematic way to begin if we just bring it in through HR and we just think about it as an HR issue. A lot of it is in HR, but there's also vendor diversity and there's also marketplace diversity. And so I think that conversation really needs to belong to the senior leadership.
Great. So who do you think are the advocates for diversity within the organization? I know, as you said, leaders should take this as a first priority within their organization, but still, when it comes to making it solicited program that everybody is into it and everybody is on the same page, like even the managers or even the line managers from top to bottom, everybody knows. But who would you suggest particularly should be the advocates for diversity within the organization?
Well, I think that HR is a fairly natural advocate for diversity and inclusion. I just think that the primary focus for diversity and inclusion should be outside of HR. I think that HR makes a better strategic ally for diversity and inclusion work than a home for diversity and inclusion work. So I think that HR certainly should be an advocate for it, but I think you really, you know, like anything else, I think you really need some buy-in. You know, I think you need the chief executive officer or someone in that circle to be a pretty strong and sincere advocate, to the extent that not only are they going to say nice things about it, but they're actually going to hold their direct reports accountable, because that's oftentimes where the drop-off is. An organization makes an investment in diversity and inclusion, C-suite people are all saying the right things and doing the right things, but they're, for one reason or another, they're not holding their direct reports accountable. And so there's this big drop-off in commitment to diversity and inclusion, oftentimes at the middle manager level. So I think that, you know, I think a pretty good chunk of buy-in needs to be in place from the C-suite. Gosh, did I get disconnected again? I disconnect myself. Am I still on? Hello? 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 Hello?
Hey, Joe, can you hear me now?
I can. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Oh, this is a different number that I called in, and I hope our audience can hear me properly. We are having some technical glitches today.
Okay.
So don't worry, we are still live on air. The call is still there. So, Joe, yeah, we were talking about the advocates for diversity, and you touched upon the role of HR, but still leadership has a greater role when it comes to expanding the idea or letting every people know of the diversity initiatives, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. So now when it comes to the, the commitment of diversity. I know, you know, organizations have their policies they're on, their leadership, they know what diversity means, but then still when it comes to employees, they have different meanings for this particular word, diversity, when we say. So that makes them a little uncomfortable, probably, when it comes to acting on the stages when it comes to diversity. So when it comes to the commitment part of diversity, what do you say? Is it part of the individual part or the leadership part?
I think it's some of both. I think there's got to be some real alignment in place. My work always begins with focusing on clarity and consistency of language and logic, because you're absolutely right. We are having conversations about diversity and inclusion, and we think we're all talking about the same thing, but in my experience, everyone's talking about something different, because those words mean something different to almost everyone. And so I think that, you know, kind of the very first thing that you've got to do inside your organization is get crystal clear on what diversity means for your organization, get crystal clear on what inclusion means for your organization, and then start to spread that information and put those definitions in place so that we can start talking about these issues and know that we're actually talking about the same thing. And the problem is that organizations have a tendency to put these big poetic definitions of diversity and inclusion up on their website and their annual reports, and they sound beautiful, but they don't actually mean anything. They're not clear and concise enough to be valued. When you can say diversity and everyone in your organization knows exactly what it is that you're talking about, then you can start actually doing some pretty cool work. But inside most organizations, that clarity is not there. You can go to 10 different people and ask them what diversity is and what inclusion is, and probably get 10 different answers. Most of those answers aren't even going to make any sense. So I think that's why I always start by focusing on the language that we use, putting clear, concise, and consistent definitions in place. Then you can really start to do, I think, some pretty cool work. But without that, it's really hard because everyone's kind of following their own path and doing their own thing and following their own meaning that they're attaching to these words.
Right. Well, the next question is there on everybody's mind when we talk about diversity. Does diversity lead to variance in performance? Do you think that is a clear-cut way to increase the productivity of an organization?
By bringing more diversity in?
Yeah.
Potentially. It depends on... To get the benefits of diversity, you need to be bringing that diversity into the right type of context. So it's important that you have the organizational culture and the relational skills for that, because one of the things that always comes with additional diversity is additional potential for tension and conflict. And done well, conflicts and disagreements can be a very valuable thing, but inside a lot of organizations, they don't know how to do that well. So they avoid it, which is unhealthy, or they have the bad kind of conflict. They have destructive conflict. And so it's not just about bringing more diversity into a team or a group or a department or an organization. You've got to be bringing more diversity into the right kind of container. You've got to make sure the organizational culture and the relational skills are in place to take advantage of that.
Cool. So I recently read your blog post on authenticity and inclusion and connecting the dots, and I really, really appreciate that you have written that. And, when it is, inside the organization, and as we talk about, workforce diversity, we know people come from different backgrounds. And, in fact, over here in the United States, if you see, every organization has a global atmosphere when people are coming from different regions and different countries. So, but still, that culture factor, we cannot avoid it because it's basically based on where people are coming from. But then still, the perception of people are entirely different than based on their culture where they come from. So, what do you think the value of authenticity when it comes to employees and letting them who they are in an organization, irrespective of which culture they are coming from?
Yeah, well, to really get all of the benefits of diversity, we have to not only be willing and able to hire people that, look or sound different than us, but we have to let them actually be different at work. And this kind of goes back to what I said about, diversity is part of the equation, but the other part of the equation is inclusion. What kind of container, what kind of relationships, what kind of culture are we bringing that difference into? Because what I see is a lot of organizations are bringing more diversity into their workforce, and demographically we're just getting increasingly different all the time. But then they're still bringing that diversity into pretty high conformity environments. So we're all different. We've got different identities, different experiences, different perspectives. You mentioned culture. We come from different cultures in different ways. But there's a lot of pressure for us to play down those aspects of our identity that make us different from other people. I don't know if I referenced it in that blog post or not, but there was a really wonderful little article in the March issue of the Harvard Business Review. And it was titled, Fear of Being Different Stifles Talent. Just a summary of some research done by Kenji Yoshino and Christy Smith about how common that is, how even in organizations with, bold, clearly stated commitments to diversity and inclusion, 6 out of 10 employees feel explicit or overt pressure to play down some aspect of who they are, right, to be more like everyone else and be less unique, less different. And so as long as that is the case, and to some extent, that's the case in all organizations. I mean, organizations are conformist by nature, so we have to push back on it. But with that much conformity, what you're doing is you're bringing all of this diversity into your organization, but you're not even getting access to most of it. Most of it's being hidden and denied and ignored and overlooked. And so I think there's tremendous opportunities. before we even start thinking about talent pool and hiring practices and bringing more diversity in, are we actually utilizing and realizing the diversity that's already on the payroll, already at the table? Because I think there's a tremendous amount of waste happening right there.
Great, great. So, you know, you have worked with many organizations, different types of organizations when it comes to diversity, and you have been traveling across the world to talk about diversity. So where do you see organizations get wrong when they at least think about diversity?
Well, I think there's a whole lot of things that they get wrong. I think it goes back to some of the stuff that I said earlier about language. I think even though it's 2014 and some people act like we have just been talking about diversity and inclusion nonstop forever, I think the truth of the matter is that the set of issues is still poorly understood. And again, I'll use the example of if you go into most organizations and ask 10 different employees at all different levels what diversity is, what inclusion is, why do they matter, you'll get 10 very different answers. And again, most of them won't make any sense. I think that this set of issues is just poorly understood, and that's why so few organizations and so few leaders have real commitment, real alignment of action around it. They're saying nice things about it because we've come to understand that that's kind of expected. We're supposed to say nice things about diversity and inclusion, especially on a handful of certain days during the year. But when it comes to real action, there's still not a lot of stuff going on, and I think it goes back to that lack of clarity. There's a wonderful line in the book Switch, which the Heath brothers, Dan and Chip Heath, wrote. The line is, what looks like resistance is often a lack of clarity. And I think that that's very true related to this body of work. There is some real resistance. There are people that are anti-diversity and anti-inclusion. But I think much more than that, there are people that just don't have clarity around what these things are, why they matter to us individually and collectively, and what to do to capture that value. I think in general, that is not clear for folks. And that's on me and people that do work. Like we have a lot of catching up to do.
Right. Finally, to our audience, going back to those, basic or taking some baby steps, what are some tips that you would suggest to embed diversity and inclusion in an organization?
On an individual level or?
On an organizational level.
I would focus, I think I would start to focus folks a little bit on a conversation around what do these things, what does diversity mean for this organization and why do we think that? What does inclusion mean for this organization and why do we think that? And I think that, you know, that's a conversation that needs to be had. It can be a fairly complicated, complex conversation if folks are kind of new to the conversation. Maybe you can prime that conversation by sharing some reading with them. There's some pretty good articles and white papers and books out there on diversity and inclusion. So I would start bringing some of that stuff into the organization, making sure that people are reading some of that stuff. I would start sending people to diversity and inclusion conversations. You know, every once in a while I bump into someone, a business manager or even an HR person, that's like, well, you know, the business case for diversity and inclusion is pretty fuzzy. I keep hearing that, and it's not fuzzy at all. The problem is those people aren't actually going out and looking at the research, looking at the case studies, going to the conferences. Those are the people that I don't ever see at those events. So invest in it like you would anything else. Bring in some information, some knowledge, start sending people to conferences, and prime that conversation so that you can make some informed choices about this is what this stuff means to us, valuable to us in accomplishing our mission, and here's how we're going to act accordingly. That's kind of the backbone of a real investment.
Wonderful. Well, Joe, thank you so much for being here with us today. So where can people come and find you and connect with you?
I'm pretty easy to find. I have a pretty unique name. If you type Joe Gerstand into Google, it will take you directly to my website. My website's joegerstand.com. My Twitter handle is Joe Gerstand. So I'm pretty easy to find, and I'll be at Sherm Annual here in a month. I'll be at Illinois, Missouri, Indiana, Kansas, Sherm Conferences, and I'll be at the Sherm Diversity and Inclusion Conference this October.
Wonderful. Jill, have a wonderful rest of the day, and thank you for being here with us, and we appreciate your support.
Thank you, Nisha.
Bye-bye. And
bye.
To our audience, we will talk to you all tomorrow.
It might seem crazy what I'm about to